Stories, ideas, music.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to 2SCR 107.3. This is Start Making Sense. I'm Shane Anderson.
And I'm Miles Herbert.
So this is a radio show kind of about social media and technology. Basically, we want to start making sense of this strange new online world we've entered over the past couple months and see what we can do to make it a more fair and equitable place. We're talking less of a surveillance state and more fully automated luxury communism.
Yeah, I think we're living in a post-COVID world at the moment, so everything in our world is rapidly changing. But here, we want to take a step back and just go a little deeper on the stories and ideas that will have a lasting impact on our society.
So, stick around. Miles, what have you been looking into this week?
Well, I think one of the big things that has stuck with me over the last couple of months is the shift in awareness around public health. Pre-pandemic, I think health was really a matter of personal responsibility. You were responsible for staying healthy, and it was your fault if you got sick. Social distancing, for example, is just a really easy and sensible thing to do if you have any kind of illness or virus, not just COVID-19. But there's never really been a standardized public health campaign or messages focusing on the need for a more holistic approach to public health. And because of this, you start to see a lot of bad information and bad actors just kind of filling this vacuum.
Yeah, the past couple of weeks, we've seen the rise of kind of C-list celebrities on Instagram gaining a lot of followers, promoting some of the more wild health conspiracies that are out there.
G'day everyone, I'm Pete Evans and welcome to my family home.
Celebrity chef Pete Evans is devoted to the paleo way.
One of the faces of the new online freedom movement in Australia, Fenos...
Panayiotis.
We've talked before on the show about 5G and coronavirus, thoroughly debunked theory, but it has been gaining more and more currency in Australia. There was even a study this week that came out that showed about 1 in 8 Australians thought that the 5G conspiracy had some truth to it.
Yeah, and I think information is just changing so rapidly. Even information about the wearing of masks, the WHO information on those protocols has changed. And you've seen in the States and around the world, some places make masks a requirement, some don't. So people's perceptions of how these things work are just really unclear. And of course, all this is still happening during the pandemic, but some things, some small things in our health system are actually starting to change.
So, Miles, who did you speak to this week?
Well, this week I spoke to Melissa Sweet.
I'm Melissa Sweet. I'm a public health journalist and I'm managing editor of Croaky Health Media,
a non-for-profit and independent journalism platform for health.
And we cover public health.
And she's also just has been a longtime public health journalist.
Shall I start with an acknowledgement of country?
Sounds great.
Because although we're, as you say, living in this very digital online era, you know, we're still, it's important, I'm a non-Indigenous Australian, to acknowledge whose country we're on and pay our respects. So I'd like to begin by acknowledging that I'm on the country of the Palawa people in Lutruwita, Tasmania, a relatively recent arrival to this beautiful country, and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging.
What has it been like being a public health journalist in a global pandemic?
Well, it's been very busy. Yeah, we've really been flat out since we published our first story on the it wasn't declared a pandemic then, on the novel coronavirus. I think it was the 28th of January. And for some months after that, it was really the only story we covered.
Melissa says there has been a slight shift in awareness around public health and the needs of people. but health services and information campaigns are still really hesitant to change.
How so?
You know, change generally happens very slowly in health. They're complex, creaking systems. You have so many layers of government involved. You have so many professional stakeholder interests. You have federally funded programs. You have state funded programs. They're things that people have been wanting to do, wanting to implement more widely for many years, but it's just been incremental, painfully incremental changes and so many barriers to making them happen.
And I guess one good change, because of the digital world we're all now forced to live in during this pandemic, there has been a huge uptake in telehealth.
Now, with help from almost $700 million in government funding, doctors are going digital with the rollout of the extensive telehealth system.
New Outcome Health data shows in the past 8 weeks, telehealth appointments have surged by at least 40% nationally, with around 5 million Australians having appointments online or over the phone during the pandemic.
You know, the pandemic presented a massive crisis for the health system to have to respond to very quickly. But it was also about how can we continue to provide healthcare to patients who need help for things other than COVID-19. So this is where there was a real push to bring in telehealth.
So what do we actually mean when we say telehealth?
Well, I think the broad definition is just accessing the doctor or your GP online or even over the phone.
Telehealth, of course, is not a new concept. It's been around for years. I mean, I can remember writing about it for rural medical publications more than 15 years ago.
So this isn't just phone calls. This can be over things like Zoom and Skype as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Melissa gives a really good example about the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. They now have a RPA virtual hospital, which is a hospital that is completely separate from the normal one that just specializes in telehealth.
So I interviewed Dr. Teresa Anderson, who's the chief executive of the Sydney Local Health District. And she was telling me about the history of RPA virtual.
RPA Virtual is a new initiative. It's a hospital that sits between our healthcare inpatient facilities and the community. We deliver care to patients in their own homes virtually. Like all frontline workers, our nurses are doing an incredible job looking after patients. One of the ways we're able to look after COVID-19 patients at the moment is through virtual monitoring. So that means patients who are positive and able to be safely isolated at home don't have to be admitted to hospital.
You know, instead of keeping people in hospitals, which after all are good places to avoid for lots of different reasons, you know, the idea of providing high-level care to people in their homes. And, you know, this is something she and her colleagues have been wanting to do for a while, but they couldn't necessarily get everyone's support. You know, always everyone, it's human nature to want to keep doing things the way you've always done them. And so, you know, not all clinicians were on board thinking this was going to be a good way to deliver care to their patients. But when the pandemic broke out, obviously, you know, there was much greater support for delivering virtual services.
And she says it's a really great example of the health sector resisting reform and now, because of the pandemic, kind of forcing their systems to change really rapidly.
It just happened that they were already working on the plans for the virtual hospital when they found out about the news coming out of China in January. And so it really gave the impetus to their work. It went much faster and bigger than they might have expected.
And so far, everyone is pretty happy with how things have been going.
Their virtual hospital opened on the 3rd of February with 6 nurses. And when I spoke to Dr. Teresa Anderson a few weeks ago, at that stage, they had more than 30 nurses, they had medical and allied health teams, and they had 600 patients registered with the hospital. Yeah, so when I spoke to her the 28th of April, that was, they had actually registered 422 coronavirus patients for care with the virtual hospital, and 348 of those had been discharged.
Can I ask, what does a virtual hospital look like?
Well, it probably just looks like an office. There's probably health professionals sitting around taking phone calls.
It sounds to me a little bit like a call center, but for health. The thing that strikes me about that is when I think of reasons why I might go to a hospital, a lot of that wouldn't be served by telehealth if I was in a serious emergency.
yeah, this isn't for serious emergencies. It's just for, say, re-upping your prescription or maybe managing a chronic illness. But what this does is it frees up space in the hospital for people who are seeking emergency care because of the pandemic or other reasons.
Previous to the pandemic, I never really thought about telehealth, about calling my doctor or booking an appointment digitally. And I think that's because it wasn't covered by Medicare. So even if it did exist, you would have to pay for it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And now, because of the pandemic, the government has come out and said that your telehealth interactions will be covered.
Telehealth services will be covered by Medicare until September, but there are calls for the Commonwealth to maintain subsidies long term.
And Melissa says that's a really good thing.
There's always some hesitation about adding new items to the Medicare benefit schedule because of the potential that costs will blow out. A lot of the measures brought in are temporary at this stage, so far as I'm aware, up until 20th of September. So the question is, the government's going to be under an awful lot of pressure to maintain the telehealth MBS items. So we're just going to have to watch how that plays out.
Do we know by now who then is benefiting from telehealth and then who might be being left behind?
I think we've known who it helps for a really long time. Melissa says she has written about the importance of telehealth for regional communities for the last 10, 15 years.
So in short, initially telehealth was brought in for increasing access for people in rural or remote areas, you know, who couldn't, say, for example, get to a specialist or so on.
And people have really been pushing for telehealth to be an option for people who don't have that kind of primary care in their local communities. So it really helps people in regional communities to be able to access healthcare during the pandemic or not during the pandemic, not have to travel really far or go into the hospital.
You know, doctors, nurses, and other people working in health systems developing COVID, getting very sick and some of them dying. So I think part of it was also about protecting our health workforce. You know, we didn't know how the pandemic was going to play out in Australia. And, you know, for so many reasons, we needed to keep our health workforce safe and healthy.
And because of this, Melissa says that telehealth, one of the biggest positives is that it drastically reduces the carbon footprint of the health system.
So I can see this happening in my own family where I have relatives who need a lot of medical care and their lives were just a constant kind of back and forth between doctors and hospitals and specialists. And now a lot of that has switched over to telehealth. It's actually taken a huge weight off having to constantly travel around to all these appointments and sit in waiting rooms.
And as we know, and like you just said, the health system isn't easy to navigate for everyone and is not always equitable. There are still going to be some things that divide it. You know, there are digital divides. Some people don't have access to internet. And as you might know, even if you're in the middle of Sydney, accessing good internet quality isn't necessarily the easiest thing.
It's one of those funny things when we put the words digital divide out there, is that it tends to put the emphasis on individuals and you think, oh, it's because so-and-so can't use a phone properly. But actually the digital divide has more to do now with just a lack of infrastructure.
And I think even when the industry is ready to respond to the needs of patients and are willing to offer these kind of digital services, sometimes there's still a lag in the uptake.
We've seen this pretty consistently in some of the news reporting by Gina Rushton from BuzzFeed. She's been covering access to abortion. And even though we've made this wide-scale switch over to telehealth, in South Australia, women still can't access abortions over telehealth. So there's like huge gaps in service and coverage that really impacts people's day-to-day lives.
And the pandemic has just made that worse.
It's accelerated a lot of it.
So Melissa says this uptake in telehealth is a good thing, and she really hopes it sticks around after the pandemic. But like anything we do online, there are some serious privacy issues with doing telehealth. That's coming up after the break.
Welcome back. You're on 2SCR 107.3. This is Start Making Sense. I'm Shane Anderson.
And I'm Miles Herbert.
This episode, we've been chatting to Melissa Sweet from Crokey about the sudden necessary rise in telehealth.
And obviously, a huge reason why people are using telehealth is the ease in which you can speak and meet with your doctor. But because of this, a lot of the platforms that are being used are the ones that everyone has, the kind of off-the-shelf platforms you can just get in the App Store.
And we've spoken about the problems with this before when it comes to courtrooms.
Like the health sector, the criminal justice system needed to rapidly figure out how to continue during this pandemic. And they turned to the technology that was already there. So they are using Facebook and Skype and Zoom. And so is everyone else when they try and contact their doctor. Melissa said she had her first telehealth appointment a couple weeks ago, and she just spoke to her doctor on the phone.
It is very tricky. I mean, we live in that era where we have ceded a lot of our, digital privacy, whether we know it or not. We've seen that through the, inquiries into the digital platforms.
And I know we talk about this a lot on the show, but those platforms, they have massive privacy risks.
I think there's heaps of room for critical analysis of, where we're heading and who's going to own this data or how it's going to be used.
And there is a precedent in Australia when it comes to our health privacy, a pretty justified precedent when it comes to the government's track record of keeping our health data private.
And there are laws in place in Australia and around the world trying to protect our data in the health sector.
Laws going back to 1996 by the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, that's what we know it as, right? Make sure that a person's health records are undisclosed to the general
public. In the U.S., for example, there's actually been a relaxing of those laws that ensure privacy to your health records. Because of this pandemic, doctors are now free to use off-the-shelf platforms like Zoom without any additional steps taken for your privacy, which they weren't allowed to before.
Hey there, everybody. Sam here. Want to release a quick update for you about the new HIPAA waiver. Yesterday, the Department of Health and Human Services announced that they would be waiving potential HIPAA penalties for good faith use of telehealth during the emergency COVID-19 outbreak. Providers will be allowed to use everyday technologies to talk to telehealth patients.
This is happening to a lesser extent in Australia. But doctors and pharmacists are urging people to inform themselves on the platforms they use and make sure they are managing their data on their own. And I think, once again, the responsibility is just falling to the patient to manage their data and protect themselves.
I have a nightmare scenario in my mind where if you're talking to your doctor over Facebook Messenger about something embarrassing, naturally what always happens on Facebook is that a couple hours later you'll get ads in your newsfeed for something.
And we've talked about it before, but those platforms aren't built with your privacy in mind. They're built around storing and monetizing your data to keep those platforms running.
It's really the opposite of privacy. Digital platforms don't want you to be private on these platforms because then they can't get your data.
So even when we have this really positive uptake in telehealth, the importance of secure and efficient digital public health measures are being left behind.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot with messaging in Australia. This idea that coronavirus prevention is an individual responsibility. And to a great extent, it is. But it also needs to be backed up with public health frameworks, which is what we can see is not happening in America.
We've already seen in Australia the introduction of really punitive public health measures, such as fines for not complying with social distancing and self-isolation rules. So these digital measures, once again, focus on personal responsibility that target Indigenous and migrant communities far more.
And it's really just one way of approaching this whole idea of accountability. one that puts the individual at the center, both in terms of responsibility, but also risk. So at the end of the day, Miles, what is the biggest takeaway from all this?
Well, Melissa says the pandemic has actually provided us an opportunity. There is a real chance to radically change a system that isn't equitable.
Yes, I think, the people that I spoke to for the Guardian article, there were quite a few people, whether it was from the Rural Doctors Association or GPs in practice, just saying because the imperative forced people, practitioners to take up this telehealth approach that they may otherwise not have done, that's really a positive because a lot of people then have found it useful.
Measures like telehealth are one thing, but they have to be implemented in the right way and they have to stick around once this pandemic is finally over.
The pandemic has really brought into sharp relief that if you don't have good public health, if you don't do good prevention, then the costs, if you look to the States or Britain or parts of Europe, the costs are just immense in terms of lives lost, in terms of all the other wider costs. So I think, the value at so many levels of public health and prevention has been demonstrated in the pandemic. But the big challenge is, will we really remember that lesson and will we take it in going forward? Because I think now there's a tremendous contest emerging between how we move into the next stage and longer term. What is the Australia that will come out of the pandemic? Is it an Australia that values, sustainability, equity, inclusion, healthier communities, healthier society, or are we going to go back to the neoliberal economic driven imperatives that really are so detrimental to wider health and well-being?
That's it for Start Making Sense this week.
This show is made on the unceded and sovereign lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. Thanks so much, everyone.